pledge.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Brian.
Andrew Brockway.
Here.
Kathy Buckley. Joseph Braziani.
Here.
Michael Hagedorn.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Jason Marsh. Debbie Pacino.
Here.
Pauline Stone.
Here.
Michaela LaFountain.
Here.
All right, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education to approve the agenda.
Motion.
Motion by Debbie Pacino.
Second.
Second by Pauline. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Public comment, we reserve 10 minutes at the beginning of and the end of the board meeting for any members of the public that wish to address the board. If there's anyone that's interested, please approach. Could you approach and state your name?
Yeah, hi, my name's Robert Burnham. I'm a parent, a taxpayer, and educator for over 25 years. And I'm here to address the parking lot issue. This is not the first time I've been before this board to bring this issue to them. On March 19, 2015, I had several incidents in this parking lot, and I brought my concerns to the board at that time. I met with the board on the 24th of March, 2015, to speak with the board at that time. And I've been told for the past year that you're currently studying the issue, you're looking into the issue, and I'm concerned about it. I had another incident with my children on the 19th of January of this year. Again, in the same parking lot, this parking lot out in front.
Mr. Burton, can I ask you one question? Can you just describe, because we have shared here at this table some issues that you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with your incident.
Okay, well, my children attend the Y-Time program. So we bring them, drop them off before school. I pick them up every day after school. So I'm in this parking lot daily, on a daily basis. Speed limit is non-existent here. I don't know if any of you ever sat out there, especially during a event where you have an away team coming in, Ticonderoga, whoever. That was the last time I remember. Vehicles are traveling in this parking lot 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. And again, it's not just the out-of-town people, okay? The incident we had on January 19th was in-house, a teacher who was speeding, not paying attention. My guess was probably texting at that point. Almost took my children out and my wife, okay? So this is ongoing, continuous. Buses, when the buses park, got their lights flashing, people pay no attention because they're behind the buses. You know, there's no designated traffic circle for the buses or anything. So cars are traveling by those buses, even though the buses are loading and unloading. That's continuous. I see that go on all the time. No direction. Especially, you know, you get a little bit of snow on this parking lot. You know, the only directional that we have are lines on the parking lot. And, you know, you get a little bit of snow on it, you don't know which way to go. I'm just guilty pulling in tonight. A little snow on the road. I wasn't really sure where that designated area to get around the traffic is. So again, you got people coming every which way, going every which way, really not paying any attention. You know, and it's just a matter of time. I mean, you know, you hope not, you pray not, but I'm telling you, it's just a matter of time. You know, I'm here, my kids go to the Y program, like I said, and once a week they go swimming down to the Y. So I pull in early, right after I'm a teacher, I get here about 4:30 or so. They come back about 5. So I get a good half hour watching this going on, and it scares me. I mean, it literally scares me. And something has to be done, you know. And I've studied it for a good year now. How it could be fixed, what could be done, what could be changed, what might make it safer, you know. So I do have some ideas, but...
Mr. Burnham, thank you for coming tonight. As you know, we're a public body and the state usually moves a little bit slower than the private sector. I can absolutely promise you that we are looking at this and we're looking at a capital project to make the parking lot safer. I've personally seen a video of how hectic it can get, and I'm sure the rest of the board saw it as well. So even though it's taken a year, we are looking into it, and we anticipate some movement on that to make it a safer space. And I think Mr. Mannix wants to speak as well.
Yeah, I did just want to tag on to what you said. Everything President Brockway said is absolutely true, and everything you said is a belief we actually shared at the last board meeting as well. I would invite you to our next operations committee, because we were talking about traffic flow and our study of this issue, and there's good ideas out there, and we'd be more than welcome to hear your ideas.
Love to help out.
Okay. And just so you know, we have remedied. We had issues at Cumberland Head that were almost as severe, and we were able to remedy those issues. We're confident we're going to be able to solve the problem, but we agree with you. It's a problem we have to fix now.
Yeah. And I'm not going away, so, you know. Okay, yeah, thanks.
Thank you for coming.
I appreciate it.
All right, we have a presentation scheduled, the FET conference update. Gary Lambert, Justin Gardner, Jennifer Goodwin, Matthew Cusetti, and David Yonta.
So we just got back from Florida. It was a little warmer than it is here. And we want to share with you some of what we brought back with us for that. It's actually not called the Florida Education Technology Conference anymore. It's called the Future of Education Technology Conference, because everything that we saw there is part of our present and future. Everybody that went down there with us are people who have very open minds and are very willing to consider new ideas, to change. And this quote really sums up a lot of things, that every bit of progress that we've experienced in our district and in humankind history has been because of change. So sometimes that change is painful, sometimes that change is exciting, sometimes it's a little of both. So we're gonna talk about that. So just as a point of reference, last year we took a delegation of 9 board members. We had Mrs. Stone, Mr. Hagedorn, board members were there, business executive Blaine, Superintendent Mannix, and teachers went with us. I think Principal Campbell, as an administrator, also joined us last year. And our goal was to inform the technology committee as to the direction that we would take as a district, and the outcome of a lot of what we brought back with us truly was the digital literacy initiative that you've heard us speak about at board meetings in the past. So fast forward a year of experience under our belt, a year of exploring and site visits and conferences and exchanging of ideas and collaboration, and we're back. We're back at FETC 2016. This time it was actually funded by a grant, so there was really no cost to the district, which was a nice benefit. And this time we brought a delegation of 10. We did have board member Buckley was with us, and we had Principal Gardner, and then the rest were the superintendent and myself, but the rest were teachers and tech integration specialists. The goal this time was not so much explore everything, but refine what we're doing now to further inform what we're doing and help support continued progress in our digital literacy initiative, as well as our professional practices. So the panel members, and board member Buckley's not here tonight, but the panel members are Justin Gardner, as I mentioned, high school principal, Jennifer Goodwin, teaches at Cumberland Head Elementary School, Matt Cruschetti at Beacontown Elementary School, and you may remember him from the last panel discussion, David Yontef from our middle school, high school. He's one of our 3 technology integration specialists. So they each have interesting perspectives coming from different points of view, from administrative, from instructional, and so forth. So I'm gonna sort of prime the pump, if you will, with a couple of questions, and then if the board so chooses, or anyone else, we can certainly field questions or send questions their way. So the first one And we had many, many, many discussions when we were down at the conference over meals, between sessions and workshops, before we turned in for the night. And a lot of what we talked about was the impact of FETC that it was having on us, because for many of us, it was the first national convention that any of us had been to. So that's where I'm going to start, because I think this is a the impact that this conference has on people helps drive them forward in what they choose to take on and explore as an issue. So I'll just throw that out there. Justin, would you like to start? What made the most impact to you as a result of going to FETC?
I think the biggest impact was just a feeling, like a reassurance and a feeling of optimism as a district, speaking with teachers and administrators down there from other districts from across the country about where they're at as a district and seeing where we're at in just a short year from where you guys started last year, and knowing the resources, whether that's the monetary resources, the devices, the technology integration specialists, Mr. Lambert and his department, just knowing that we have that and hearing places that struggle to find one technology person to help with everything in the entire district. It just really reassured me that all of the things, the applications, the websites, the software, the devices that were being shown to us down there, that would seem very overwhelming. It's very overwhelming, but even more so if we did not have that support through devices, through availability of funds, through support staff to really put things into place. So I think that was the biggest impact for me, is knowing that I can just take this website, I can take this device, and we can run with it and we can try it out. It's not 20 steps to get to that point. So I came away with a lot of things that are going to help me do my job, that I can share with my staff, that I think are going to be great for our students. And it's not, this is a 3-year down the road process. This is, we can come back and we can try this out with some students right now. I can try this out right now. I can go to Mr. Lambert, I can go to David, and we can work on this and we can test it out and we can roll it out if it works for our students. So I think that was the biggest impact, is speaking to other people and hearing presentations and realizing that we're in a really great spot for our students, and we're not at the beginning of the road. We're well down the road compared to a lot of other districts, especially I think in our area. So that was the biggest impact for me.
And I'm just going to piggyback on that comment. One of the things that I noticed that was dramatically different from last year is last year, anybody that had anything to say of interest, we were taking notes and jotting down everything because we didn't want to miss that important golden nugget of wisdom. This time, and I think we all experienced this, we had other people asking us questions about how we did it and how we were able to accomplish things. And it changed, like Principal Gardner said, it changed. It was very confirmational for a lot of us. And in that one short year's span of time, that's pretty outstanding for a district to move and pivot that quickly. So, David, now you bring a different perspective. You're obviously supporting teachers and students through the Student Help Desk and through instructional, modeling. What type of impact do you think FETC made on you?
I think it made a huge impact in a lot of different ways. I don't want to piggyback on what both of you said, but you're absolutely correct in that every session I was in, I heard people asking questions, how are we going to support this through our infrastructure? How can we start? How can we, have all these devices in our kids' hands all at once? And it made me realize this is something we've all done already. We've charged ahead. And we're not just leaders in our area in this realm. We are leaders nationally. And I think that that's something that we should be very proud of. And I think it's something that, honestly, I felt leaving FETC that, and I believe Director Lambert agrees, we could be one of the presenters next year at this conference. But as what made impact with me educationally was just the amazing width and depth of the amount of technology and apps and learning that can be supported through technology that I learned at FETC. It's amazing how much is out there. It's no longer just, well, you have Microsoft or you have Apple. There's so much more that you can do. We can really pick and choose the finest of any technological innovation that we would want to use. And I think that that's going to bring the highest quality of learning back to us. It's just a question of sorting through everything and figuring out what that best qualities are.
Now, Justin was new, Principal Gardner was new this year, as well as Mr. Johnson. Matt Crescetti has been with us for how many years now? 17 years. And your building has a couple of participants in the phase one of the Digital Literacy Initiative, but you're one of the brave second phase adopters. What impact did this make on you as a long-term, long-standing employee in the district, knowing what we've gone through and maybe what's ahead of us?
Well, it was nice to see. I had a lot of the same notes that these guys had about how many different interactive and exciting apps and websites there are, and actually see them put to use out there. We all went to one, I think us three went to one. It's called 60 Instructional Technologies in 60 Minutes, and that alone was worth the whole conference. It was 60 different things that you could use. We've already shared them and taken things away from that. Also with how our school, it was surprising how good of a place our school was in. I had people asking about our cases down there, like five different people, because they had trouble with cheap little plastic cases, things like that. They were talking about grant money, spending money on the Wi-Fi, which we already had, so they were using up all their grant money on stuff that we already had in place. I also saw it as a lot of kids are bored these days if it's not exciting, so it's just a great way to get them interested, and even the lower kids, to get them hooked. And I'm at the elementary level, but at the high school level, so many more people said so many more kids were doing more homework because they could just jump on their phone or their tablet, whatever it was, and you were making more connections with kids than you would with just your normal assignments and stuff.
And Jen, you've been here for quite a while as well in multiple capacities, right? Middle school and elementary.
Yes.
So for you, what was the impact of WTC?
I'm part of the first phase of the digital initiative. So going down there and just being able to network and talk to other teachers who are also have been using it, what they thought was what their strengths were, what their weaknesses were. And I really left there feeling so proud of the place that I work, because I went down there thinking that we were going to kind of be one of the early stage schools down there, and I was going to kind of feel maybe a little over my head, but I didn't feel that way at all. Like, we were definitely some of the front runners, and a lot of the conferences that I went to, we were awful. I provide a lot of insight to other people who their school may have been doing it for the last 5 or 6 years, but they just were still having a lot of bumps in the road and roadblocks, that we've seemed to have all of our puzzle pieces have come together very nicely. So it was just an affirmation that we're headed in the right direction, and that the things that we're doing are going to empower our students and help move them into this next generation of learning.
Great. Quite impactful. So the second one is a little bit more specific. So we saw a lot of tools. We saw a lot of apps. We saw a lot of web-based services. We saw tools. They're all over the place on the exhibit floor and the sessions and the workshops. So if you had to pick one, or if you can't pick one, maybe just a couple, what do you think was the most useful instructional tool that you saw that we might be able to apply here at Beacon Town?
I don't want to steal. I don't know, Mr. Mannix, if you have made any announcements yet on.
I haven't announced good time.
Partnership, so I don't want to. Do you want to make the announcements? Or
take it away.
All right, so I was not in attendance at this presentation, but Mr. Mannix and Mr. Spohr, our technology teacher, were there, and we went down there with a couple focuses. One was to find support, instructional or technological support for math in the middle school, high school, which has been an area of concern for us. And it's always difficult, especially with New York, being from New York State and Common Core, and how it's a challenge to find things that line up that would apply to our students, to our staff. And they went to this one session that is through the University of Florida. It's this service called Math Nation, and they offer a product or they offer a service that basically, Mr. Mannix puts it, it's Khan Academy on steroids. It is it's web-based videos that walk through different sections of algebra, which is the biggest area of concern that we have, and provide students instruction and help, pre-made videos from like five different presenters, and they're typically young, like, you know, like college-age grad student type people. Five different, they're all teaching the same lesson, so students can pick out the person that they kind of relate to most, and they can go through the entire algebra curriculum. They can take quizzes, and based on the quiz results, they'll be given videos that would support them. They basically have a 24/7 support, almost like a Facebook wall, where you can write a question that you have or an issue that you're having, and someone will get back to you and respond. And this is offered in Florida. And like I said, I was not at the conference or that part of the conference, and Mr. Mannix saw me near the escalators and was explaining this as the person who presented was walking by.
Let me take it away here because I got to give some credit.
There you
go. So I was a little busy with some other details I was working on, and I said, Mr. Sporter, I said, go over and ask him if we need to be part of this. We need to be part of this. And he was over there pestering him, and he was working him, and he's getting shot down. And I was still on the phone, so everybody left, and I was like, oh, you know, and Seth's like, well, I'm like, well, we're not done yet. So I went over by the escalator, and I saw Principal Gardner, and we just started talking. And then I see the guy, the professor from the University of Florida, and it didn't work with me and Mr. Spohr, but I don't know what it was about Justin. Kind of cornered him, and next thing you know, he said, you know what, we can partner with you as because we want to partner with other states down the road, and you can give us data from, you know, outside of Florida. Our education system is different. So we are partnering with the University of Florida on this initiative, Go Gators, and I think it's going to be, I know it's going to be, it is Khan Academy on steroids, and it's going to be super resource for our teachers, our parents, and our kids. And that was one of our goals going down there. That was great. Did I skip anything?
No, actually, we met last week. We spoke with them over the phone with Math Nation, and Mr. Lambert has worked on getting the technology on our end set up so that we can jump into this and start messing around and hopefully get it rolled out as soon as possible.
We'll be ready in just a couple of days.
So how is this incorporated into the curriculum or into the student's day?
Oh, that's great. So we will be, after we talk to the teachers and show this to the teachers, we will be moving this as an adaption into the curriculum initiative that we adopted about a year and a half ago, I think it was. But this will be a resource for our teachers to use in the classroom, and it's a 24/7 resource for our students to use on their devices. Now, all of our sophomores and all of our freshmen have devices, and I haven't talked to Principal Campbell about this yet. So since he stole my thunder, I'm going to steal somebody else's thunder. We have 8th grade students that are accelerated that weren't part of the digital initiative this year, but their teachers have been working hard to be part of the digital initiative next year. But since we have this resource available for algebra, we're going to work with, we've already worked with the Department of 21st Century Learning, and those students will be receiving a Chromebook soon, and they'll have the device too. So everybody will have a device and have total access to this resource 24/7. And they'll be able to, it's very intuitive, and they'll be able to navigate it. And it should really support teaching and learning. That's what we do.
And that was definitely the most useful tool, I think, impactful tool that I saw from my point of view.
And just to put it into perspective, to give Superintendent Mannix and Principal Gardner a little bit of a boost here, I think there was a state legislator from Wisconsin or Michigan that was able to do the same kind of deal with Math Nation. So they've got kind of the same kind of pull. Sounds like
Justin was a big difference.
That's right. So, David, what about you? I know you deal with tools all day long and services and apps, but there must have been something that stood out for you.
What really stood out to me was actually less of an instructional tool for students and more for the teachers themselves. As my fellow educators will agree, sometimes professional development can be a little on the dry side sometimes, especially when it comes to learning new programs, new methods, and that sort of thing. One of the companies that I ran into actually on the expo floor was a company called Kite Learning. What they are is they're a company that provides professional development through screencasting, which, for those of you that don't know what that is, it's basically somebody, in this case an educator, focusing on a specific idea, concept, or in this case, app or tool, and they create videos on how that can be used, and then further, how that can be used in the classroom. One other thing that makes Kite very nice that I like a lot about them is that they break the videos down into tiny little bite-sized chunks, 30 seconds to a minute normally, that just covers one step on how to use the program. And it's part of an overall course that the teacher can take either as part of a group or separately and individually. At the end of those courses, there's an assessment quiz and then achievement badging sort of component at the end, so teachers can proudly display, I'm now a master at Gmail or Kahoot or any other sort of app that we might want to use. To me, I find that to be just fascinating because it's something that I can provide to the teachers without having to sit down and plot a whole course with them. It's something I can say, check this out. This is something that's really amazing. I think you'll be able to learn a lot from this. And then if they have any further questions, I can sit down and work with them individually.
From so that it's point kind of on. Like Math Nation for professional development.
Pretty much, yeah. Makes
sense.
Exactly.
Now, what about you? I know you attended a lot of interesting sessions.
I have a few. I found one that's good for behavior, and it's all about promoting positive behavior. It's called ClassDojo.com. And each student would have an avatar on the screen, and instead of taking away things, you're giving them points for what they're doing correctly, and they can see their score go up, so it kind of encourages the positive behavior, and something you can just downsize while you're teaching and then click it back up on the projector. There was one called newsela.com. This was really neat for differentiated instruction. So if you had a reading passage, you could put that in there, and it'll change the lexile level, but it'd still be the same exact concepts. So kids that had an IEP or lower kids, they'd still be reading the same exact concepts, but just on their level, and it had quizzes built in for them. And there was one other one called classtools.net, and that one has tons of different things. There was one that I just did today. My students don't have Chromebooks yet, so I had to take them to the lab, but they had to read biographies and do a report and make a poster, and there was one site on the class tools called Fakebook. So it's a spin off of Facebook. They had to make a Facebook page of their person that they read about, their famous person. So today we started that and got that saved, and the kids loved it. They actually, once they get playing with stuff, they actually find out things that we don't even know. They were searching these things, and once they put in their names, they got their pictures to pop up of their famous person on their own. So that was kind of neat to see. And one last one was, it's called Padlet. It's basically a virtual post-it note. So you could post a question, it could be vocab or like a bell ringer to start the class, and the kids would type their name and it would pop up on the screen on the post-it note with their answer, so they could kind of all respond and see the answers up there on the screen. There's many more, but I'll stop there.
One of the things that I want to add to what you just said was when we did our site visits last year, Matt, one of the things that we heard over and over and over again from, regardless of the district that we visited, was how putting devices in students' hands with appropriate training for both the teachers and the students would have, one of the benefits would be the ability to differentiate instruction to a degree that's very difficult to do just in a normal, chalk and talk type situation. You mentioned News ELA, and for those that have never seen it, there he mentioned that you have a passage with literally just a slider. If you slide it up, you have very complicated language. You slide it down, it simplifies the language, but it's the same passage. You talk about differentiating instruction on the fly. Students can self-adjust to the level that they're comfortable with and then gradually become more successful and tackle things as they have the ability to do so. So that, even with leveled readers, that's not the same type of process that we could do. Those certainly help, but things like News ELA takes it to a whole other level. So thank you for bringing that one up.
One last thing, like you just mentioned the leveled readers. The kids know, even though it's just a symbol, a triangle, a circle, and a square, the kids know which one is which, even if you don't ever talk about it. And with that, they could discreetly do it, and no one would ever know the difference. So that was another positive.
Nice. Jen, I know we talked about a bunch of different tools that you saw, and there was a lot of excitement there. Did you find one that stood out for you?
I came back, was really excited. Our faculty meeting was the week after we came back, right. So I was couldn't wait to share. But I didn't want to go there and give them 60 apps when a lot of people aren't ready to absorb that. I thought it would be too much for them to take in. So I broke it down to the three things that I used that first week I was back because I thought it would be something that would benefit everybody in the elementary.
Sure.
And I'm going to piggyback off your fake book project that you guys were doing. Research in the elementary is a big part of our new standards. But it gets a little scary putting kids on Google, to be honest with you, little kids, because you just don't know. You can put in the most innocent thing and have something come up that isn't what you were hoping would come up. So one of the things I found down at FETC was a search engine called Googligans, and it's a completely kid-safe search engine that functions just like Google. It offers images, it offers videos, it offers all kinds of articles and information, but it's all safe. It's been filtered. They're not going to come across anything inappropriate using that search engine. So I thought, well, it sounds good. Let's try it out. And we were in the middle of doing research, so I applied it with my kids. Were doing a research project on animals, and it was awesome. I just can't explain to you. They just got so many well-researched, kid-friendly articles, videos. We were doing a thing called a ThingLink, which is kind of a virtual book report, if you will. And they were embedding videos, and they were being able to get images, but they were all safe. So I loved that search engine. The other thing that kind of piggybacks on that is another app called ViewPure, which is, it takes a clip of a video. So YouTube is the same thing as Google. You sometimes don't know what you're going to get. With ViewPure, what they can do is you can find a clip, something that you want to show them on YouTube, and you put it through this app and it purifies it. It takes out all of the advertisements, it takes out any links, it just is the video in its true form. And that has been something that I've used a lot since I've been back, and I think a lot of the faculty members at Cumberland Head are also using. So those were fantastic things to be able to use. Add-ons that you can do to Google Docs are amazing, the different things that you can put in there, like a voice. My kids send me things on Docs. They turn in assignments to me. Instead of typing out my comments, I can just record my voice, my comments. I can get more detailed in what corrections they might need to do or what extension I would like them to do, and then just return it to them. So
and
that was really
cool. And stay with the document.
It stays with the document, yeah. It's really cool. I could go on and on and on, but I won't take up the whole night.
So. And just for everyone's reference, my last slide, which I'm going to share this presentation with you, has a collection of virtually everything that they mentioned. There's a couple that I didn't scoop up, but I will share that with everyone so that they have both the link to what the service or tool is, as well as a description of what it does.
I wanted to add one that I thought was really important too. So I really went down there with the focus of how do we improve teaching and learning here at Beaufortown, but we had a focus on math, and I also had a focus on the primary level, and this kind of even goes back to the interviews that I had to become superintendent, that we talked about if they're not ready to read by third grade, if we don't have early interventions, great early interventions, then we're just placing kids behind the eight ball. So knowing that we're going in the right direction, but we can still support our teachers more, I found a great product, and what's unique about this product is it's a one-time expenditure. A lot of times it's like every year you pay for a kid or a teacher or something like this. Is a one-time expenditure, and it brings the alphabet or words or simple sentences, so really pre-K 1-2 brings them alive, and you really have to see it to believe it, but it's amazing. And when kids are put in front of this, they can't contain themselves. So in terms of the alphabetical principle, phonemic awareness, and phonics, tackling three of the big five reading components, It will do that, and it'll do that in such an engaging, fun, rich way. So we've using our ELT funds, we will be purchasing those different components of Alive to help our teachers in reading, but also in the early stages of math as well. So you have a reading and math component to that, and maybe at some point we can demonstrate to you. But it's going to be rich for our primary grade students.
Okay. Last question that I had, and this is really general, and I'm not talking necessarily, when I say item, it could be a tool, it could be an idea, it could be a concept. It doesn't have to be something purchased. It might be something that you just took back that you hadn't thought of before, another perspective. So what item do you feel that could support both the digital literacy initiative and or hopefully in student achievement within the district.
I think the item would be not something physical, would be the mindset that I think I wasn't here last year for the planning stage of this, but from seeing other districts and their rollout, it seems like we were in the right spot and we had everything planned out and we were being proactive about how we were going to roll out devices, how we were going to do anything related to the digital initiative. And I think the mindset of understanding that technology, apps, software, device, it's another tool. We're not just using technology because we want to use technology. We're using technology because that's another tool for our teachers. It's another tool for our students to be more successful. And keeping that in the front of our minds and not lax on when we get 2 years into this and 3 years into this, that always has to be a constant reminder that this is why we're using technology. It's the same reason why we use a textbook series. It's the same reason we might purchase specific furniture. They're all tools to improve instruction. The technology is not the goal. We have goals for education. We have goals for our school. Technology is another way to kind of achieve those goals. So I think that was the biggest thing that I took away from the conference to lead to achievement here.
I think for me, the item that I felt could support it the most was, again, more of a concept rather than a specific item or program or anything. One of the first sessions I went to was all about curation, and it made me realize how important curating information and documents and other objects are in this day and age, not only for teachers, for the Common Core standards, but also for students as they go on through life. And one of the big pushes of this session I went to was showing all the different ways that information and other forms of proof can be curated and kept almost permanently, so a student or anybody really can have that record of their achievements and what they've done and their improvement and how far they've come. And I think that's something that we should really be implementing with our students as much as possible, especially when they get towards the end of their high school career and are going to need to start applying for colleges. They're just going to need to have that body of evidence to show what type of student they are and how they can develop to become a better person and learner. And that's really, I mean, it was one of the first sessions I went to, but it was the one that really kind of impacted me the most as to how we can make our student achievement much more obvious at the school.
So one of the things that, and we never had this conversation before, David, but one of the things that the superintendent and I saw at the executive summit at the very beginning of the conference was talking about student digital portfolios as well as students marketing themselves at a very early age, whether it's through LinkedIn or online resumes or infographics or whatever. So that really dovetails both from a leadership perspective and an instructional perspective. Matt, what about you?
I really feel like I could use everything that I talked about before and so much more. I'm kind of going down as a beginner. I got more information that I could even explore to get into, but I've already tried some of it. Also, just that it was nice having the teamwork of the school down there. I was looking for things for high school, you know, things for the lower primary. It was definitely like a good team effort, good bonding experience for our school and staff that went. And also talking to Jen, who's already done it, and some of the people in our building, just that it's definitely doable, it's easy, the kids love it. You know, I haven't heard anything negative about people that are already doing it, so kind of reaffirming all the positive and all the opportunities that are out there for kids, really.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah. Jen, rounding it out?
I think a lot of the sessions I went to, they talked about teaching through technology, and I think that was powerful as far as bringing that back, that it's not replacing instruction, it's not changing the material that's being delivered to the children. It's just teaching it in a different way, a more interactive 21st century way, and it's just using a new vehicle to get them to where they need to be successful. That was the thing that I brought back that I think was one of the most powerful things from the conference.
Thank you. Now, we've gone much more than 20 minutes, so my apologies, but there's obviously a lot of great information. And we would love to share more privately or via email or anything, but does any member of the board have other questions for the panel?
Mr. Lammer?
Yes.
Having gone to the conference last year, one of the things that I thought I saw, which seemed to be a little bit overwhelming, is, and I can ask you now that we've gotten this far, is how is managing all the inventory? You know, kids with damage and getting them in the right hands and keeping track of, you know, finding a lost one, and where do you store all of, you know, and how do you manage that? How's it going?
It's going very well. If looking back on it, I think we were a lot better prepared than I thought we were at the time. Had we not gone down and talked to people and done site, and FETC is a part of it, had we not done so many site visits and done our homework, I think we would have fallen on our face like a lot of other districts do. Having been through it now, it's part of our DNA. It's just, you know, we get, I have a picture that I will share with the board right now because it's something that I'm incredibly proud of. This is a, what grade is Eden in? If I can, actually, I can't mention student names. Okay, Eden.
Sorry. Well, say Michaela, we say.
Yes, true. Eden Habina.
She's, I believe, ninth grade?
Yeah. Eden Habina is one of our student help desk trainees. We started off with about 32. We're hovering around 28. We've lost a couple, but most of them are in it to win it. And yesterday, Eden was the very first student ever in our district to do a screen repair of a cracked Chromebook screen. David trained her in my office, trained her on one, showed her the YouTube video, walked her through it. We bought some specialized tools. Nothing superhuman, but it does take some focus. And Eden did her own repair, and I told her how proud I was of her, and she said, I'm really proud of myself, too. And that's the type of thing that we're doing here. We're not just... It's not just theoretical. It's not just you know, textbook. We're giving students real experiences and real skills, and that would have not been possible. And if we had waited for every single obstacle to be overcome before we leaped into this, we'd be like a lot of other districts, and we wouldn't have done anything. So I have a lot of gratitude to the board, the superintendent, and the team that I have that we've made this possible, because it's certainly not a single effort. It's there's so many hands in it, but the simplest answer is it's going very well. It's going better than I dreamed it would. I will share this with all board members and probably post it on the district page too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Superintendent of Schools, Daniel Manis, mid-year goals update.
So I know everybody would like me to be very brief right now, but you gave us a long list of goals 2 years in a row, and I have to proudly say that, you know, that those goals moved us in that digital direction and many other directions. And we don't, and I will be brief, but I have to tell the board that you owe it to every member in this school community to read this mid-year report everywhere, because the amount of effort and the amount of time and energy and the amount of change that has gone into the system over 2 years is well worth the 30-something pages in this mid-year report. And I thought it would be really easy to just focus on a couple items, but I can't shortchange one. I can't tell you that the Learning Center doesn't matter as much as the lunch program. Okay? I can't tell you that project-based learning isn't as important as the digital initiative. They all come together to create that mosaic, which has put us in the forefront in a very short period of time. So I'll be brief, but please, I think we owe it to everybody to spend a good evening and read the good work that has gone into this school district. And I thank the board for creating these goals, because they did push us in a dramatic direction, and where we are today is phenomenal. We're not done, but it's certainly incredible. I'm going to talk about a couple high points. on page one, new, not in the goals, our new high school leadership team, starting in September of 2016. We're better today than at any point in any point in time last year. During the spring of 2015, we hired, went through a long process and hired Principal Gardner with no experience. And he's hit the ground running and has created a tremendous environment for our high school students. I'm sure he might have been a little nervous not only taking over such a big high school, but when his assistant principal told him in August that he was leaving, I'm sure he was a little bit nervous and may have been thinking that that teaching job he left was looking pretty good again. But the team that we've assembled in there, with your blessings, with Greg Myers and Mr. Manny, has really done a fabulous job of creating that environment that we really need to move to. They're more proactive, they're more relationship focused, and that's one of the reasons why we're seeing such a tremendous drop in our discipline referrals. Moving to page two, I would take a good look at our attendance data and our discipline data on page two and page three. Our attendance data shows an increase, and when you're at 95%, 1% is a lot. But when you're at 1% increase, when you're coming to school for a much, much longer time, that is a tremendous amount of learning opportunities for our kids. When you move to the discipline referrals, to see discipline referrals basically down 50%, I really credit that to our environment that we've created at all of our schools. And I know I gave Mr. Manny and Mr. Myers some credit, and also we have a new administrative member at the middle school, Mr. Johnson, who's doing the, likewise building those relationships and meeting kids in the hall, and it's certainly building up that bank account with students so you can be a little bit more proactive. Our new goal for this year, 2015-16, because we had two-year goals, but we had a new goal that was starting in 2015-16, was goal four, and that's to promote and enhance the physical, social, emotional health and well-being of every student. And what a great goal. And it was kind of an add-in, but you know, you can't dispute that your focus should be on that. And I will move to page four and talk about new this year, the district changed our 504 procedures, where we now have a process to ensure that we're providing students with the services in which they are entitled to and to ensure compliance with 504 legal requirements. We were decent at that before, and now we're really pretty strong in that. And I'll give Public Tavernia or Taverny much credit there. And the Director Short and her team is working diligently to give every staff member over time training in our therapeutic crisis intervention, or TCIS model, which is a non-confrontational way, a de-escalating way to address student behavior issues. Instead of escalating issues and having it become a power struggle, what are the strategies you can use to wind kids down and get them back on track? And to have that training, the training happens right next to my office, and you know, people go in there almost begrudgingly, like, oh, another training, and then they're just laughing and having a great time throughout the training. So that's really helping our environment as well. The new programs like the Red and Gray Cafe, Eagle Treats, Project-Based Learning, the Green Team, our Global Careers Program, and now our Geek Squad are having that tremendous impact on our students and giving them a real-life learning skills, but also making them feel maybe part of something a little bit more. New this year are residential construction and drawing, design, and production systems. We never offered classes like that. So we had a whole group of kids who liked that type of instruction, and we had nothing for them. So I give the board credit for allowing us to bring our shop back, allowing us to hire that teacher, who actually was hired in our budget and hired in our grant. So, you know, we passed the budget before we received the grant, so that's going to help us when we talk budget as well. The board wanted us to increase the courtyard usage, and boy, have we done that. And I credit the Sarah Puckett with the ELT grant of finding partners that will supervise the courtyard and allow our kids to just go out and enjoy the courtyard when they're done their lunch. And the feedback from that has been really strong. The feedback from our students hasn't been strong, but the feedback from our parents and others regarding our increased behavioral health services north, our counseling, counselors that come into the district and help our kids with their unique issues, it's the right thing to do. We're one of the few schools that have social workers, and we've increased that the last 2 years. New this year is our partnership with the Department of Social Services to have preventative service caseworkers in. We have one particular individual who spends 4 days at 2 days at each elementary school. And in that meeting we had with the Department of Social Services, like I do, I think I twisted their arm a little bit and said, this is great for the elementary. Why can't we do this for the high school? So with Polly's help, we are the first district in the area to have that type of worker in our high school, working with our students and with our parents, because our high school kids have issues too. So that's going well, and we're a pilot program for them. We want it to really succeed. Our project-based learning, I'm actually going to wait and let our project-based teachers and students have a time in front of the board at another date. But it's really been transformative for our eighth grade and our middle school. And I give Principal Campbell credit. We kind of put this in front of the middle school and said, is this something you want to do? And Principal Campbell thought it was one of the last pieces that she felt they needed to add to really make the middle school special. And I think she hit it right on the head, and I think it really has made the middle school super special. Our food and nutrition program certainly accomplishes goal 4 in trying to help the social and emotional well-being of our students, to have students not have to worry about where they're going to get their next meal. How incredible is that? How incredible is that for our families? How incredible is that for our students? And then on top of that, they found out that they can give these meals in the summertime to anybody, even though they're not from our district. We'll be reimbursed, and we can at least break even. And Roxy kept on going, and she has a snack program as well. So to have kids not have to worry about meals is, it's fascinating. It's unbelievable to know that last year, we served approximately at this time 100,000 meals, and this year at this point, we're at 300,000 meals. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work on our cat. That's a lot of strain on our cafeteria, but I think everybody sees the value for our kids. Our learning center, that's one small room. Now, we had a learning center last year, and it was a shell with some desks and a couple laptops. This year, if you go into that space, Principal Gardner's truly transformed that space, and you see all kinds of kids in the learning center with Plattsburgh State students and Mrs. Dalla, who came back to meet in the town. And just some data points for our learning center. First, you got to go in and see the space. It's one of my favorite places just to go into. But so far, just this year, we've serviced 75 students. 45 courses have been completed for credit recovery. And we had a 70% pass rate on 55 total Regents exams given in January. So our kids are clearing those hurdles to graduate by utilizing the learning center. It may seem small. Our PTEC students would come, and they weren't really necessarily feeling a part of Eatontown, because they'd come and go off to Peru. And it would have been easy just to let them go off to Peru, but we saw that we could still feed those students and give those students a bag lunch, so they didn't have to worry about that when they went to Peru. And Roxy and Keith LaPierre stepped up, along with Principal Gardner and Mr. Lambert, to make that happen. Our extended learning time at the high school, we look at the Green Team, Book Club, a CSI club, algebra review, Montreal visits for our French people, how do they go into a French-speaking environment, and how do you survive? Believe it or not, flower arrangements has been huge, and many, many students have just enjoyed unwinding with flower arrangements. Driver's Ed for credit recovery, and we had Joe Judge here, and he wanted some money for an app to place on the Apple Store. So we hired Joe Judge, and now he's teaching coding for our high school kids and our middle school kids. New this year, we allow our students to take their driver's permit test right here at Eatontown. We have college planning for our students, and we have explicit career planning for our students. Our outreach for our parents has been significant. However, I've got to tell the board that creating parent nights, we put a lot of effort in that over the last 3 years, and we don't generally, we'll have FBI people come in and we'll get 3 people. We'll have great programs and we don't have the parents come in. But the second we put our kids, you know, out there doing something, they show up. And it doesn't matter whether it's at Cumberland Head or at the middle school. To be part of the project-based learning night, to walk through the middle school on the project-based learning night, I would doubt that very few students, if anybody, didn't have some caregiver show up to support that. The place was mobbed with parents. So that's our, we got to go back to that. That's where we're going to get parents in, is when the kids come in. Creating events, that's just not necessarily, our return on investment isn't where it needs to be. As Principal Lambert in Goal 5, Principal was our technology committee, we've taken that goal, we've escalated that and moved that so far forward. I remember at FETC, we were sitting around, we called it 5 good minutes, and everybody would talk, we did that again this year, and everybody talked about five minutes on the floor and talk about what you thought was great about FETC. We had a heartwarming moment where Pauline said, you know, I've been here, don't mean to put you on the spot, but it was a heartwarming moment. She said, you know, I've been a part of Eatontown for over 50 years, and I can't believe that we're going in that direction. And I don't know, you know, I think their tear fell, and we were all kind of moved. And to see that, and to see, you know, where we are, and to go back there and have it be so affirming that we have, you know, what you thought would be interesting and be incredible. You know, we're there. We're not done, but we're there. So kudos to everybody who's taking part in that, including our switch to the Google Apps for Education. I talked about having to put some arms behind some backs and really showcase our Google Apps for Education as opposed to Microsoft. But we not everybody's there, but we certainly see the value in that free application for all students. Our Director Lambert helped us with, I think, the business office for our Smart Schools Bond Act, which was new this year. It's up for public review right now. And the Smart Schools Bond Act, I think we're the only district that has a 14-year investment plan. We're reinvesting that money back into our school and our school community in more ways than one. ELT, ELT has been great for all these wonderful fun adventures for our students. But also we have a Badge Bridge program, which provides AIS services or just academic intervention for our students, whether they're identified or not. I have a grid that the director Paquette has put in here of just some of the offerings. As a dad, I'm going to tell you that my kids have taken just a few items. They've taken French, they've taken Spanish, they've taken Snap Circuits, and my son took a book club. My second grader was in a book club for the Magic Treehouse book in Australia, and he was coming home talking about Aborigines and whatnot. It was sad. Sad for my students, my own kids, my biologicals, as you say, I guess, around here, to be exposed to that is. Does everybody know that's Leanne's channel? We're purchasing 10 small engines for our students that really enjoy that type of learning, and there is learning involved there to work on. And those will be here long after that grant is gone, if it does go away. Our STEM experiences, I've already talked about some, but snap circuits, scratch coding, because one of our goals in Goals 4 was to provide more STEM experiences. Our cadets were here. I think we shared that with the board. But we worked with College for Every Student. Principal Campbell executed the game plan. Director Paquette brought them in. And College for Every Student and the cadets performed outstanding for our kids. And to see that group of, I think they're underserved STEM populations, that's what we're going to call them, the underserved STEM population students, just thrive and have total excitement was great for those kids. Our libraries all have a makerspace where it's not just you're not just going to the library to check out a book anymore, you can have some hands-on learning in the library. Our beautification efforts, I'm going to credit Mary Blaine, who will do this even on our part. I think she finds it therapeutic as well. And our green team, who are upgrading our outside facilities, and of course, our buildings and grounds folks. We have other parental initiatives that we've engaged in. It was our first parent academy at Beatontown Elementary. Just kind of piggybacking on the work that Brittany Tribenis did the year before. I forgot whether she called that parent academy or not. We have a lot more services for our parents, including the math module support, reading journey support, and we'll continue with more. Our professional development on page 17 with our, we've had Virginia Bond from Renaissance Learning come in to help us with STAR, and I can go on and on. They're all important. They've all helped our teachers craft their profession to a higher degree of success. One of the great people we had come in was Willow Sweeney from Minnesota, and she just, every teacher loved her. I think every staff member loved her, and she gave us a common vocabulary of trying to stay above the line, and trying to stay positive all the time and find the good in what we're doing. And Sandy Pavin's helping us from Renaissance Learning, a different Renaissance Learning, with our digital initiative. I think it's important that you'll see coming out, we just finished the flyer today, we're going to start having professional development. We have summer professional development. We're going to start seeing, we have actually teachers calling for Saturday professional development. So when you have teachers call for that, I think it's our job as the curators of time to make sure that happens. So that will be something that happens in the very, very, well, I think March 5th is our first Saturday PD day. Google training and whatnot. Our curriculum, we've upgraded our curriculum with the fourth grade social studies, hard book, and ebook. We have multiple supports for Eureka Math, which is our math series. And one of the questions that somebody posed a long time ago was, how can we have our meetings and have our principals and administrators in these grade level or content area meetings? We have that now. We have common planning time at all levels. And we do push in with our administrative team and help guide discussions. Not on every meeting, but they do push in. Please look at page 19. This is a page I'm quite proud of. It starts with the data from 2011, and you'll see these are just county schools. When you'll see that we're in eighth place. This is for 3 through 8 ELA and math combined scores. We're in 8 out of 8 2012, 8 out of 8 2013. The same 2014, we move up one place, and then 2015, we move right to the middle of the pack. And I think that's super important. I mean, you know, of course, we're not satisfied with the middle of the pack. But when you look at our free and reduced lunch, we have by far the highest free and reduced lunch population, and that's not a built-in excuse, but that's some reality for us. And we have the lowest per pupil expenditure, and we're climbing at the highest rate. So this tells us that the work that you allowed us to do tells us we are going in the right direction. The next page talks about common planning time and our curricular supports. Somebody wanted to know, or more than one board member wanted to know, how do our STAR local, it's a STAR assessment, it's a local, it's not a locally created assessment, but it's an assessment that we give our students locally. And how does that align with the state assessments, if those students are taking the state assessments? And we have, when you take the STAR assessment, they've taken all their data over the years, and there's a grid that will show you where the projected state assessment score for that individual is or would be had they taken the state assessment. So that's valuable, and we certainly know how to use that tool to help identify our students for either enrichment opportunities or academics. Support. Our security initiatives, really, that goal 3, and I'm finishing up right now, that goal 3, we hammered out that goal in year 1. I think we accomplished absolutely everything in year 1. It was a high priority for us. Well, all this was a high priority for us. But, we're not done. We're working on parking lots and other safety and security issues. But the pieces in the goals are completed. Our public relations, hopefully you feel proud about our public relations, but the positive messaging about Beaton Town is continuous and ongoing, and it's across multiple forums, and it's out there in the communities. And I was shocked to see our population this year. Joanne actually completes our bed stat and our student enrollment number. We grew this year. We're the largest district in the county, and people are moving into our district because of the good work that everybody is putting forth. So our messaging is all there. Our relations, I think, are strong, and fiscal stability, which used to be all the, you know, what we would talk about. A number one, it's the last piece. I'm going to just read off a couple staggering numbers here, and I'm not going to talk about our budget because those aren't so staggering, and we're going to deal with those. But we spent probably 2 months negotiating with the Vermont Green Line Power Project, And we've come to an agreement of $67 million over 20 years given to Beaton Town. So let's just say that one more time, $67 million given to Beaton Town over 20 years. Unfortunately, we can't do whatever we want with that money, but fortunately, that money will stabilize our taxpayer rates. So one thing you should know about this is, as a taxpayer, regardless of what happens, if everything was to stay the same, which it's not, right, but if everything was to stay the same, our taxes would be lower in 20 years than they are today. That's mathematically, that's, we're assured of that, but we also are assured that nothing is going to stay the same. But it's absolutely phenomenal to see tax rates go down $2, another dollar, another dollar for 20 years. That will help us pass budgets and move this district in the right direction. On top of that, we've spent, I don't even know how long, it's been a year now, finalizing the energy performance contract, which will bring $14 million in upgrades to our facilities with another $3.5 million in additional revenues into our district to help with us with our programming. New this year are two new grants, each worth basically $40,000. And then I'll leave the rest of that whole other page on our fiscal stability, but we are strong. And I think we have to take it upon ourselves, because we're going to talk next about our budget. And, you know, if we didn't do the work, if we didn't do the work writing the grants and working on our energy performance contract and working on all these other financial options, we'd be looking at these numbers and feeling that we're helpless. I look at these numbers and say they're not going to stop us. We're going to be able to keep on moving, and including that is the Smart Schools Bond Act work we did. So, any questions? In closing, I just really impress upon you, I gave you a running tour of this. Take the time, read this. It's not a super polished document, but every piece in here is invaluable and builds a mosaic of Beaton the Town today. Thank you.
This is impressive, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you.
So why don't we just go right into the budget process? Business Executive Lane and Treasurer. Treasurer Bell's preparing his slides. I need the board to realize that today's a really important day, because if we're not going to have another meeting in February, we need to make some decisions today. Some decisions need to be made by March 1st, as you know. And one of those is, what's going to be our tax cap number? And the other really is, are we going to set that capital reserve that we've been talking about for some time? So that topic is in our address. We're going to address right now and show you how the whole thing comes together for us.
All right, before I put our multi-year budget up on the screen, I just want to cover a few things, because a lot of times I put something on the screen and we get lost in the numbers and you start reading them. Just catch up on where we left you off last time. We had estimated our tax levy cap to be a negative 1.5% last time we spoke in public session. Mr. Manx, I'm sure, filled the board in. We came in, CPI came in at 0.12%. And it left our tax levy limit at negative 1.38%. What that negative 1.38% is, negative $273,000 in tax revenue. That's our tax levy limit. Also, state aid came in at roughly a $95,000 increase over this current year budgeted state aid revenues. So that's 0.53% increase. And remember, state aid is half our revenues, right? So if half your revenues increased by 0.53%. That's an increase of 0.25% on all your revenues. Simple non-common core math. So that's where I'm going to show you our multi-year budget. So you'll see some large negatives at the bottom, and I'm not here to try to scare you. What we're reflecting the multi-year budget is increase on total budgeted expenditures of 1.13%, 1.38%, and 2.39%. That's total budgeted expenditure increases. Just so you know, we're not trying to scare you. We're not talking about huge budget increases. It's more of a large effect on the revenue side of things. So I'll throw it up on the screen here. And now that I've mentioned all the details, you've seen this before. We just haven't dropped in our state aid numbers and our tax cap number. So we were hoping for state aid to increase 2%. That was our conservative estimate. The governor's proposal came in at 0.5, roughly 0.5%. So that did hurt our bottom line as well. So if you look at the middle column, forecast for 16-17, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about 2016-17 budget. We're looking at increasing our budget expenditures of roughly 1.13%. That's it. And with our loss in revenue and the tax cap limit, we come down to a negative $610,000. And that is reflected upon future years. Obviously, we're going to be carrying a loss over. So that's why the multi-year budget looks like large negatives as well, because 16-17 has such a large deficit. And this is maintaining our great program and all the great stuff Mr. Mannix just talked about. That would be maintaining everything. We went through the spreadsheet before line by line. If you have questions on this, please feel free to ask. But we've actually created a document for the board because you guys have the tough decision of deciding what we go out for at our tax levy. Our limit is this. Our limit is negative 1.38%. I'm sorry to say that, but that's what it is. I'm going to show you a spreadsheet that now shows just the bottom line. So the excess slash deficit, where you see the red numbers, I'm going to give you those 3 years based on 16-7 tax levy limit that you choose. All right, so I'm laying it out with 0%, 0.25%. I skipped all the negatives in between because if you go out above the cap and you go to contingency, you can go to 0%. All right, you don't need the voter approval on that. That's contingency. So I left out a negative 1. I left out a negative 0.5. If the board's interested in that, let me know, and I can add that to the spreadsheet. So we'll jump over that multi-year, but you're just going to see the bottom line based on the 16-17 tax levy. So now you can see the first line is our tax levy limit, which is a negative 1.38% increase, as it's called, but it's a negative, so it's a decrease, and it shows our deficits going across. It's exactly what you just saw on the other screen. Now I'm taking out the detail. So if the board chooses to go out at zero, that's what we're looking at right now currently with our current numbers, just the governor's proposal for state aid. Many things are going to change between today, next week, next month, all up until the budget vote. Many numbers change, different variables change, but currently, as of this date, that's what we're looking at. The board has the option to go above the tax levy limit if they'd like to. We know that carries with it. We need a supermajority to pass the budget, which is 60% yes vote. If you get 59, it defeats the budget if you choose to go over the tax levy limit. So there's the scenarios. There's the breakdown on the data and how it affects our multi-year budget. The board talked about in past years that they always want to take a multi-year approach to their decision-making, and I hope this helps in your decision-making. I'm not changing any expenditure side. We're estimating state aid at 0.53% and then 1% of our total pool year after year after that. But that's what the numbers look like when you plug them into our multi-year forecast. Yes?
Why are the 18-19 numbers so large?
The deficit. Yep, so we have some pilots that come off the books. That's one piece of it. We have in 17-18, they're actually a positive. I guess I'm going to take it as a backward step. There's a positive in 17-18 because EPC revenue, we get $300,000 in EPC revenue in 17-18, but in 18-19, we're only getting $82,000 in EPC extra revenue. So that affects the calculation. That's why one may look like a positive and the next year is not, so that's a roughly $200,000 difference. Also in 17-18, our plan for purchasing buses, we are purchasing 3 buses, and in 18-19, we're purchasing 4 buses, so that's a little bit of the cost as well. Many other factors are in there too.
We have been talking about with the operations committee and with the board in our multi-year plan, the concept of planning for capital project. And that truly comes into play here, and you can really see how that's demonstrated, because in the planning phases, we talked about the year that would kick in would actually be in 18-19. So for us not to experience this dip, because as you have a capital project, you close it out, you have debt service payments, but you also have the roughly 80% building aid coming back into the district. You know that we have retiring debt service going off with building aid, decreasing or going down as well, but this is the year that will come into play. If we take action now, planning on this, we could actually make some of that up with a capital project, which is very different than not having a capital project and just having those expenditures go somewhere else in your budget that don't get the 80% building aid back on them. So we're trying to be very, very cautious and careful as to how we strategize that and carve out some replacement capital project. And we've talked in several different committees and here at the public session about the needs that we have in the district on both the safety and health perspective.
But this assumes that there isn't a decrease in state aid in the following years.
Correct.
5%. So our break-even analysis is 1.68 then to go to net zero for 16-17?
Correct, and that's prior to the legislative budget as well.
Now, well, the question hasn't been asked, but there's a comfort level. We're going to get the job done. I'm just going to tell you that whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do it. We're going to do it to the best of our ability. We're going to try not to impact programming at all. And we're fortunate to have, you know, a big grant on the side really helping us and propping us up. That would be, that's $3 million, right? But if we were to ask for my recommendation, which will probably come at some point soon, I would be very, very comfortable coming in at that 0.75 rate, which is above the tax gap, and you need the 60% majority, but it's not an alarming, number. And that, coupled with a capital project, you can see that number in 18-19 change dramatically. And it wouldn't, we wouldn't be in fine shape if we kept going out at a bunch of 0.7s in a row, but for this coming year, it does not put us in harm's way.
I actually did run a calculation anticipating there may be a question. So as Mr. Mannix pointed out, looking at the 0.75, how does that weigh in on the 4 years that we've been in tax cap so far, what we've experienced? You may recall that in the prior 13 years, the 9 years before the tax cap, we had wide fluctuations in the tax levy increases, from highs of 12.9% to -1% to -2%. During that period of time, the average tax levy increase was maybe about 7% of the calculations. Since the tax cap, the average allowable increase, which we haven't, you may recall, we haven't always gone to what we were allowed to take. Mm-hmm. But if we have worked out what that average was, it's 2.45% in that 4 years. At a 0.75, how that affects that running 4 year, 5 year average, that would put us at 2.26%. So we're still coming in under what that running average would have been at those allowable rates. We didn't take advantage of those allowable rates. But to help you, again, look at it from a multi-year format.
Well, if we stay at the 1.38%, where is that $610,000 going to get made up in the budget?
We've been working very diligently on that.
So knowing that that contingency is zero, we can handle zero without layoffs. That's where we are right now. I can't make that same promise at -1.38%, which is that tax cap.
Okay. So if we go out at something obviously above the -1.3, then we require the super majority. If it fails, we go to contingency. It's important for people to understand what that means for program. It's important for us, but it's important for the public to understand what that means for our current programming, for the kids, and for the school if we end up with a contingency.
We talked about it at the agenda setting meeting, too. If we do go above it, we're going to have to sell it. Simple thing is, we're going to have to sell it. We're going to have to. We looked into if we can spend money to send out flyers explaining it to every household.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying that, you know, we need to understand so that we can do this selling job. What is that going to mean?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about a couple items and then I'm going to let Mary take it away. There's a hot factor here is
the year I started, it was almost like this whole the whole district was still on contingency, because we were on contingency a few years before that, but we hadn't reversed some of those policies.
Right.
So we were kind of still living under that umbrella, so it's not going to be that dramatic. Something new this year, the Smart Schools Bond Act money, as it's read right now, won't impact us on equipment purchases. If you're on a contingency budget, you can't purchase equipment. But if you have the Smart Schools Bond Act money in the grant, we don't have to worry about that equipment piece, which is really, really nice, because equipment really helps move us, I think, forward. The some of the other components, Mary, why don't you take them?
For example, there are student supplies. You're prohibited from purchasing any student supplies at the classroom level. There is capital bus purchases, which you're prohibited from purchasing in a contingency budget. There are certain wage increases that are prohibited in a contingency budget.
Facility use, too.
On the facility use, you have to charge people all the expenses that you incur. That's something you've kind of modified a little bit. In recent years, you can't just have free use of the facility.
Yeah, I believe the big one there was the fitness center. Was the one that we shut it down to the public. It became a hot, the community use of the fitness center had stopped because we weren't charging for the use, and state law requires you to charge for use of the facility by the community if it's not for the students. And that was one of the hot topics in our last contingency.
Is there any programming that would be impacted by a contingency?
Programming? Using the programming hit to contingency is the inability to purchase equipment. But there's nothing that's going to really impact programming. Sometimes what impacts programming is if it can't handle the contingency budget, of course, and we're telling you that if we did find ourselves, we've done the exercise, we find ourselves in that contingency spot, we will be okay for the 16-17 school year.
And we do have grants. We have new grants,
yes,
that we've brought into the district that give us a little bit of breathing room and I hate to say it, but a safety net, really. You know that that's not a long-term plan.
Right.
That's just simply a Band-Aid.
Right, and then you're fortunate that EPC, which we put in a lot of work for, that really helps us the following year as well. So, we really worry about ongoing 0.7s or zeros or whatever, but over the short term, we're fine. And, we've had bigger obstacles to overcome in the last 3 years. We'll get
that. So, what you said on the contingency side, parents and teachers are already helped provide more materials for classrooms that currently, that's what happens. So there's also potential safety risk by not having the buses purchased. But we did that operation for study, and that's what we...
It is a true safety risk. We went a lot of years without purchasing buses.
Sure.
Can I just tag on what you're saying?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many buses I saw in the back of a tow truck going by my office. We're in the business of getting 2,000 kids to and from school safely.
Mm-hmm.
We need buses to do that. And we don't have that situation like Peru and Plattsburgh and other schools have where, if you're within a mile or 2 miles, you walk to school. We don't have anybody within a mile or 2 miles. We bus our kids to school, a few of them drive into a dangerous parking lot, which we have to fix, right? But we do need those buses. And to the credit of our financial planning is we have built buses into our budget, which is nice to be in that position.
But then that would be impacted by the contingencies.
So my concern is, what you're showing us for 16-17 says that in order to maintain the level of progress and good growth in this kind of socioeconomic demographic that we have in Beekman Town, we need 1.68 to be even. And so that 300,000 difference, how is that going to be met? Something's going to suffer. So what is it? That's the part that concerns me. What is it?
And there's a lot of different components there. You probably remember when we had all these red numbers and how do we fix those red numbers. And we implemented an incremental approach. And we're going to do the same thing when we go in the negative direction. So it's a little bit here, it's a little bit there. And when you have hundreds of budget lines, it fixes itself relatively soon. There's no doubt there's pain here.
But we have to also keep it in perspective of our total We have a lot of moving parts, and we are critiquing those parts with a laser multiple times during the week, our routine week here. Kind of just scrubbing the numbers, saying, okay, what about this? What about that? Where's this bid going to come in? So we are really reallocating very aggressively at this point, and we are taking advantage of all the resources available.
You have a fine administrative team back here, too, and we talk about this stuff at our ATMEs. And if we need to bite the bullet, unfortunately, or maybe it's fortunately, this district's no stranger to that. So we can do that in a way that won't dramatically impact teaching and learning. One of the things that I'm going to be most proud about, if we get this right, is, you know, Michaela's graduating, right? But when she was in seventh grade, she probably looked at the high school and mapped out a plan. When she got to her freshman year, and I know other kids a couple years older that serve on the same student council as Michaela serves on, their plan was not here. Their plan got destroyed when we made all those cuts. Mm-hmm. So that's our first. That's what I look at. Number one is those kids that are saying, "How am I going to use Beatmantown?" They're not only going to be able to use Beatmantown and digital learning and other new things that we have coming that we need to talk to you about. That stuff's going to be here. That's, to me, the most important thing is that those kids that are counting on us are still going to be able to count on us. It's not necessarily even at that 1.6. I'm telling you, at the 0.7 would be, for me, and it's just my decision, I'm going to follow what the board says, is a number that will help us move forward, not just stay status quo. And even that zero number, because of the good work we did, really even last year, right? This board made a tough decision last year and went out at 3.57. That certainly helps this year. If we went out with that super low number, what other districts did, you know, we wouldn't be in this position.
So on that point, I'm going to jump down to the history of our tax rate and our tax levy, where we were. And we talked about these cuts, and you can see, if you look back to the history of 2009-10, 2010-11, a 0% levy, and then a negative 1.89, and then boom, oh my God, we need to go out for a huge budget increase of 12%. That got defeated, and it went down to 8, and that large 4% gap, I mean, we're talking, Mr. Manch just talked 0.7%. That's what he talked. That got defeated, and we lost 4% of our budgeted revenues. So then that just decimated a lot of our programming and really hurt us. But look at what happened before. We went out at a 0 and a negative 1.89. One of our only controllable revenues in the school district is the tax levy. So as soon as you take a negative in your tax levy, you are losing so much ground for the next 5 to 10 years, all in that 1 year. And you can see it illustrated right here in our tax levy history.
One of the pieces we have to point out is over the last 3 years, we're one of the only districts, and maybe the only district in the county that's had a decreasing tax rate. You know, 0.7 doesn't move us. It's not going to dramatically move us. Although there are some other factors like pilots and whatnot that impact our tax rate. But we're going to be very stable in our tax rate. Obviously, at 0.7, we're not looking at a dramatic increase. That helps sell budgets, right? People want to know how it's going to impact them. You know, when we start talking about a capital project having zero impact on you, we start talking about a school budget that has really zero impact on you in terms of your tax rate, I think people could say, okay, and they can support that, especially when we're doing great things for our kids.
Mary, I know it's awful early, but what would you estimate at that 0.0 or 0.70, where would it be as far as for the tax rate per thousand? Just a guess.
I haven't even ventured a guess because I haven't really touched base with tax assessors yet to get any indication on how the tax base is going to change, and that's part of my formula, is to take that overall tax base and divide it by what we're estimating our tax levy is going to be.
I see, the only reason I say that is when you go to the public, that's what they want to see.
They want to know that.
They want to know that there. They don't care what the tax levy is right. Saying over there. They want to know this figure.
Right. And I'll tell you that we have had, if we could do the easy calculation and say there's been no growth in our towns, but we know there's been growth in our towns. Just right around the corner, we have a Dollar General. Believe it or not, that impacts our tax rate. We have opening in the very near future, which I'm sure went on the tax, or better have been on the tax over the town last year, is that beautiful new hotel. Fairfield Inn & Suites. There's been a lot of growth. I don't even, the big project over on Tom Miller Road is at FW Lab. That's a huge building that wasn't, I don't believe, fully assessed. So if the assessors, when their assessors do their jobs, they do them well. If they're doing their jobs and they're assessing, those go on our rolls too, and they help us and they support us. And they help keep our rate low. The rate's going to stay low. The rate's going to, if we don't have a big increase, you know, you certainly can't, they can't come back to the school and say, you know, you drove our tax rate up. That's when our money.
And this early on, our tax rate's really a large guess. But if you look at between 13-14 and 14-15, we increased 0.77%. And our tax rate went down. It shows us even, but that's rounded. That's the way they ask us to do it. And Mr. Manis will argue that it did go down because it went down half a penny. Went down half a penny, and we increased our tax levy 0.77%. So that was that specific year, and right now it's a guessing game, but there it held flat as an example of our history.
That's right, it was 0.77 that year, and it held flat tax rate.
Mary, do you have any historical data on what the percentage of passing budget was when we stayed within the cap? So if we know,
yeah,
if we go over the cap, I want to know like how much percentage wise we have to play with in terms of 60%.
The number actually last year, let's just go to last year, where we were the only school district locally to go out with a 357, and we had one of the highest support rates. We had 73% support rate for the budget. In the year we went out at 0.77, and I was amazed at this, we still had 30% of the people vote no. So, but when you look at the difference, it seems like you're going to get about 30% of the people are going to vote no, because at 0.77 they voted no, and at 0.5 is almost the same number.
It's really, I mean, when you look at these increases that we've had, in this year, we could have gone as high as 3.7.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, 3.57, we could have gone as high as 4.9, almost 5%. So you can't always come in under and try to continue that trend. And I hate to say it, but we are a little bit in a rebalancing here, and we do have to protect our tax levy base because, as we've seen, as history is showing us, our state aid number, which we all know is multiple lines of state aid. You've got foundation aid, which is the biggest component of that, formula-driven, and the other expense-based aids pretty much follow our expense history. So that somewhat is a bit of a wash, but that foundation aid has virtually been frozen for several years. The state is not fully funding that foundation aid, and it's not flowing through to high-need districts like Meeker. So if we're being squeezed on that end, the only other variable we have is the tax levy. We've got to consider the options.
I think it's doable, but you all have done an amazing job these last 3 years of putting the information out there in a way that's palatable to the public and easy for them to understand. And that's where the success is coming in, I think, with the budgets, that people grasp the numbers and grasp where it's going. If we can do that again this year, I think it's doable.
It'll be easier this year, right, because there's less. But can I just also throw a wrench into the works? Can you scroll down, Eric, or scroll up? So the idea that I've proposed is that 0.7 or 0.75 notion, so keep going up a little bit more. One thing you need to really consider here is how many times can you go over the cap, right? And one thing to consider is if you're going to go over the cap, you know, 0.75, I should tell you I'm comfortable with, but I don't know what next year brings us, right? I don't know what the other year brings us. So some people would submit that if you're going to go over the cap, go for that 1.75 or that, you know, that 2 number. I'm not submitting that, but it's something you need to consider that. You need to put that in the hopper and consider that.
That's why Leonard's question is a good question, is, you know, to have the same rate, what does the number on the right have to be? If you scroll back up, based on Leonard's question, is to be at 17 per thousand, what does that maybe change going to be?
It's out of our control. There's no way we could give you that number because it's dependent on the assessors, not on...
No, I understand that, but as right now, if you were to do it with the numbers that we have now from last year's assessment,
it's the same.
It's going to be the same, right? So, I guess what I'm saying is
it's going to be a little bit different because we had omitted taxes last year. There was that anomaly where we had properties identified through TDC that were not on the rolls, that came on the rolls. So when you have omitted taxes and you have your levy calculation, you take that off the top before you calculate your tax rate. So that's reversing this year. So it won't be exactly the same. There's an extra step in that formula. But again, I can't tell you until I believe it's the end of April when we get any indication as to what the omitted taxes might be coming in from all four towns this year. So our real property process, the cycle, doesn't really help us in the budget cycle because all of that information becomes available after we start the budgets.
That's always a problem.
But what we did, we were able to kind of give a pretty good projection the last 3 years because we do go talk to our assessors and talk what's new, what's coming on, what's being reassessed at a lower value, what's being reassessed at a higher value. We have those conversations at the town of Plattsburgh the other day.
They're hesitant to give us any indications because they don't even look at it themselves until I think it's March 1st, which is taxable status date. And then after that, they go through their grievance period where they hear back from people on the assessments, and that brings them until like the end of May or towards the end of May. After that, they'll start throwing spaghetti at the wall and giving us like little hints as to what direction it might be going in. Other than that, we're reading the paper, we're looking at all of the newsletters coming out of the IDA and everywhere as to what we're seeing that's happening in our communities as we're making guesses.
Anything else?
As it stands, anything above negative 1.38 is going to need a supermajority.
Correct.
Well, I think if we're going to go for a supermajority, we at least ought to go for 1.5. It doesn't throw us to the top. It's below the 2%. We're going to have to fight for it. I hope people understand. And unless you're going to go for minus 1.38, brings you down, you got to go for the supermajority anyway.
I can't see us staying at 1.38, especially if we're going to make cuts to programming and stuff.
I think if I would say, you know, you asked a question about how many people shoot it down, right? And I think it's a difficult question if you put in perspective the climate and of the time. You know, it's when people feel like they're throwing good money after bad, they're going to have an intent to shoot it down.
Yes.
Because it's bad. But now, with the progress that we're having and the growth and the improvement for the kids and everything all around,
bang for the buck.
Exactly. So the value is much different. So there's more trust.
By the time they vote, we're going to have the figures that it's going to be basically,
right,
you know, within that. So that's going to be the big thing.
Yeah, and I don't want to throw a scare factor out there. I told you at zero we're good. I said right now today I can't guarantee it, and we'll go through that exercise down the road. But the other reason I know we need to know, but we also are definitely anticipating something from our legislators, something because Flanagan, who used to be the chair of the education committee, said you can expect 1.5. He doesn't go out with that and say that 1.5 billion. Without having some backup. So we are expecting something to help change that bottom line as well. So I don't want to tell you we hit that number, we're making cuts. That's not where we are right now, but I can't tell you we're not, that's for sure. Okay? But as a taxpayer, I definitely agree. I think it's the value, it's the return on the investment for the tax dollars that people look at and what we're doing. I mean, we're bringing people into the town now. I mean, we're actually bringing people into the district because of some of the efforts by the people sitting in the audience. So if there's nothing else, I just want to finish up a couple other notes here. The support staff negotiations, that team definitely needs to get to board clerk Menard, and we need dates because that group has been meeting, and they're going to be prepared to negotiate, and we will be as well. The capital project helps those numbers. You know, we've implemented there because There's some variables, but we certainly haven't even adopted that yet. I gave everybody one. This is an important one for you. Nothing to do with the budget. As board members, you should know that the New York State Education Department has made changes in the 3-8 testing, and they gave you those changes in this grid. You take a look at this grid, and I will not editorialize my beliefs on this grid, but they do demonstrate a change in 3-8 testing, which the State Education Department believes should be meaningful for our parents and help curb the opt-out movement. Speaking on behalf of the state, for the after district.
Okay. Right, thank you. Right. And Michaela, do you have a report?
Yes, I do. The first time ever that our model unit, or Harvard Model UN, has received an award down at Boston. Am I allowed to mention names?
You are.
Okay. Ethan Mayram is a senior. He received the Honorable Mention Award down there. Our ELT Flower Arrangement Club is selling their arrangements for $2 to raise money for a local cause. They haven't decided what cause they want to yet, but they're trying to keep it local. Our middle school is hosting the regional spelling bee here March 4th because of Grant won it last year.
Correct.
So that's why we're hosting it this year. And then the program that connects kindergarten through 12th grade, that really like connects our students, is mentoring, which is put on by the National Honor Society. Last year it used to be the Varsity Club, but this year it's National Honor Society. And they work with elementary and middle school students to meet one-on-one individually at least once a week. And that's what helps our, I think, kindergarten through 12th grade students. So that's all.
Thank you, Grace. Committee reports, if you could keep them brief, audit, report, operations.
Yeah, we've been busy. We met twice since our last meeting here, and we met on January 28th. We discussed the EPC with Siemens and Tetra Tech, our architect. So we're kind of getting a lot of details done there. I've talked a lot about EPC, so I won't go any further than that. And we met just yesterday, talking about the capital project, mostly, with Tetra Tech. Siemens wasn't invited because we didn't discuss the EPC. But we're in a situation where we need to make some decisions about the capital project, and because we're losing debt service and it's an opportunity for us to take on a capital project. And we were discussing a lot of the things that's been talked about here tonight already, such as our, you know, redesigning our parking lots at both campuses. And it's something we have a high priority for. And I was just looking to see if our parent was still here, but it's something we spent over an hour on yesterday. And personally, I really like the plans, and we're going through a lot of different options and combinations. One would include, or the biggest thing we want to do is separate the buses from the car traffic. I mean, we see where that, you know, where that could be very beneficial. And we're asking things like, is it possible to have an entrance for buses off 22, which brings in a lot of hurdles, and, you know, we need approval through DOT. But Tetra Tech's doing that kind of work for us. And through a capital project, things that won't be covered by the EPC, such things as redesigning our use of our green spaces in the back here. I think we have a real big opportunity. It seems to have been done in the past in patchwork, and it's just, we have a lot of opportunity. It seems like it's not laid out very well, and so we're looking at a bunch of different plans, and once we kind of narrow our focus on that, we'll present more details. But the big decisions that we have to make is, you know, how we're going to move ahead with the capital reserve and capital project. But lean on Dan and Mary, but I suppose we're going to continue to talk about that.
Well, the really what's in front of you today, if we're not going to have a meeting of We're not going to have a meeting. We either need to have a meeting in February 23rd or whatever date that is, or we can make decisions today. And what we're proposing is having that capital reserve established with $500,000, just like our experts from Albany said, and that would allow us to have an $18 million building project. Now, we don't know that we'll be at that level, but that's with $500,000 of the capital reserve and then using other debt service and just keeping our taxpayers whole and keeping and increasing our facilities for our students. So I really think it's a great, we're being great stewards with taxpayers' money. So we're not impacting taxpayers. It's money that they dedicated to improve school some time ago. Obviously, facilities erode, things happen. We'd be just reinvesting what they've already approved. That's all we're doing, and getting 8 cents on the dollar for that money. If that money comes off, and we still need to make the improvements to like the bus garage, we have nothing on the dollar. We either want 80 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on it, it's 80 cents on the dollar, or do we want nothing on the dollar? So that's an easy question. That's an easy answer for me. That all starts with this board saying we'll put a proposition in front of the voters for $500,000 capital reserve, and that will actually, that expenditure actually helps us on all those bottom lines over there. Okay, so that's in front of you, and then the tax cap number that has to be in by March 1st. So if we don't do it now, we definitely need another board meeting, and it's fine to have another board meeting. Just telling you.
That's, well, we have it slated anyway, don't we, to have another one in 2 weeks?
We do. The only reason why we necessarily talked about not having it is because other than those two items, there's not a lot of programmatic changes or anything else that's kind of driving the budget. And usually there's pretty rich conversations about what we want to do.
I mean, personally, being very involved and invested in this, you know, I don't see why we wouldn't move forward. I don't know if you guys have more questions, but like Dan said, you know, with the debt service coming off, it's something that we need to move forward on, so that the taxpayers, we're not giving it back to them and then trying to get it back in another year or so when things you know, become apparent that we need to do some work. But it's zero impact on the taxpayer.
It's not just that, mm-hmm. That's the number that we have to go out at for the tax gap. We have to do both of them at the same time. So if we do that tonight, then we have to have that other discussion. But let's save it until, go ahead.
One of the things there, if we put this money in reserves and we don't use it, you're not losing. That's the whole part that's got to be understood.
Right.
It's just being taken from the past debt. It's going to go into reserve if it's not used. And if it is there, it'll stop the ups and downs there of year-to-year tax. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good idea myself. So
let's revisit that at the end. Mm-hmm. Next, we have the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education that following resolutions on the agenda hereby approve minutes CSC, CPSC, and 504.
Motion.
Motion by Debbie.
Second.
Second by Joseph. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education that the following resolutions, resignations, appointments, and retirements are hereby approved.
Motion.
Motion by Pauline.
Second.
Second. By Jason. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education that the following resolutions, field trip and settlement agreement, are hereby approved.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Debbie. Motion by Leonard. Second by Debbie. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to Board of Education that the following resolutions, financial reports, are approved. Motion. Motion by Debbie.
Second.
Second by Leonard. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Andrew Brockway.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley. Joseph Graziani.
Yes.
Michael Hagedorn.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Jason Marsh.
Yes.
Debbie Pafnow.
Yes.
Colleen Stone.
Yes.
All right, additional items. There's a public hearing on the Smart Schools Investment Plan at March on March 8th, 2016 at 5:45 p.m. Where is it being held?
It's just before the board meeting. So.
Okay. All right, and then going back to what we were just discussing, do we want to have another board meeting on the 23rd? The reason why I think that we should is that we're making a big decision on where we want to come out on the tax levy, and I don't know if anyone has any more questions or if we want to stay here for another hour or two tonight to hash that out. Input from anyone?
I think you can make the decision tonight, but...
Well, it's just how comfortable people are. I mean, do you have a number? Does everyone have a number that they're comfortable with and can live with? And do you know how much that's going to impact or not impact the district?
As far as for the first adoption, no matter if it isn't going to be negative 1.38, you're going to go back to zero if it's voted down. Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to have any more assessment or account information about at the next meeting anyway.
No, but what I'm saying is, I mean, do you want to go out at 3%, 2%, 1%. Those are the issues that I'm talking about.
1.5 brings us pretty well. It brings us under 2. That's my feeling on it. And
I was going to recommend whatever break even was. I mean, if the institution says this is what it costs to run the institution at the caliber that we are, then break even, that's what we should do. And that was, it wasn't out there, but it was 1.68 or something. So I'm happy with the 1.5. Certainly above a one.
Anybody else?
I agree with Leonard. I mean, I think we could, you know, what's the benefit of going back and forth on a quarter of a percent, but I think a 1.5% is fair and gets us to where we need to be.
I'm comfortable with a 1.5 and the reserve.
Jason?
Yep, I agree.
Debbie?
Yeah.
So, yes. All right, so what I would do is propose a resolution that would allow the district clerk to bring forth two resolutions. The first one would read adoption of this budget requires a tax levy increase of 1.5%, which exceeds the statutory tax increase limit of negative 1.38% for this school's fiscal year, and therefore exceeds the state tax cap and must be approved by 60% of the qualified voters present in voting. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Jason. Discussion. So everyone, 1.5. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Does that have to be a roll call?
That should, yeah, roll call for that?
No, it's not, well, I guess it's
Without
technically financial. I mean,
nothing.
Yeah,
you're
going to
recommend it in the actual,
you're
going to vote on the proposition that goes
to the bachelor's.
Okay.
Which will come in March?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then I had motion for the second resolution to read the authorize the clerk of the board to bring forward a resolution to establish a capital reserve fund in the amount of $500,000 for voter approval. Second by Leonard. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Does anyone have anything else? Public comment? All right, resolved that the Board of Education appoint, I need a volunteer other than Leonard kids to keep notes.
What's that?
Just to keep notes of when we're going in and out.
Just to give them to Dan.
I can't hear you.
The time.
Executive session.
We need a
clerk. Joseph.
Oh, come to clerk for
all right, motion for Joseph Graziani. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Leonard. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to go into executive session to discuss the employment history of a particular person or persons. Second by Debbie. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
8:10. And we don't anticipate any more action to be taken after the executive session.
Can we break for a few minutes first?
Yeah.